Welcome to From the Roots Up. My name is Sean Frame, and I'm happy to bring you topics of importance to us every week or every chance we get. And today is no different. However, today is a little bit different in one way, and that is today is actually our official 10th episode, which I know doesn't sound like a momentous number, but realize this is all done as a labor of love because, you know, I care about you. I care about us. And by the way, I do have a lot of fun learning from the guests we have on the show. This week, I really wanted to do something different because I wanted to congratulate you all. We have solved all the problems. Okay, I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute, we did? You mean everything we've been talking about the last 10 weeks has been completely solved and everything's okay? Yes, absolutely. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the efforts you put into solving all of the issues of our time. We finally did it. Give yourselves a round of applause. Okay, I know. It sounds like a dark joke. I thought about this a lot. You know, when we talk about these issues, I think that the notion might be that I believe, and maybe you believe, that these things actually will be solved in our lifetime. And we close every show with the basic phrase, this basic idea that everything is impossible until it isn't. And I still believe that, absolutely believe that. But is it right in these times we live in to give people hope that we might make progress? Is that too much? Is that setting false expectations? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I do know this, though. When we talk with one another, when we talk about issues in a way that isn't loaded up with partisanism, when we get together and fix things in our community, the world, our world as human beings, as Americans, as Californians even, gets a little better. And I do know from reading history that it is these incremental changes, one by one, day by day, little by little, that add up to the sweeping changes that seem so obvious in hindsight. So though I started with a dark joke telling you that we had solved everything, I think the point really is that we can, if we start to do something today. And that's where I wanted to start this 10th episode. So welcome again to From the Roots Up. I'm glad to have you here. And we will be having a conversation, just you and me today. So stick around for that. It's going to be a little dark, as it always is, but it will always end in a place of light. Told me, always love. Hate will get you every time. Always love. Don't wait till the finish line. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. All right, welcome back. And we're going to continue this one-on-one with you and me today on our 10th episode. I wanted this to be a little bit of a reflection. I haven't really tried at this point to line these shows up with the news cycle, and that's been very intentional. I like to talk about issues as they are, distinct from what happens in the day-to-day. So much of what we see and wherever we get our news from is the spiraling up of a topic, the spinning out of it for days on end, and then the eventual fade away. And what this does is create a disposable news cycle, right? Like everything just feels like it's coming in and it's in your head and it's the most important thing ever. And oh my gosh, you got to do something about it. And then it's gone, never to be heard from again. That isn't actually how the world functions, right? Like we all know that the business of running our country and our communities, people get up every day and they go to work and they do that business. And much of that is just missed. What isn't missed, however, is the downstream impact of all those efforts. And that's why I've wanted to keep this show as distinct from the news cycle as possible, as just disengaged from it, which probably seems weird in these times, but it's been intentional. It's been an idea that we should be talking about everything independent of the crisis du jour. And really talk about the broader issues and how they impact us. And so, you know, this may make this show seem a little weird compared to most of what you get in social media and podcasts and, you know, where everybody is sort of talking about the same thing all at once. Meanwhile, many things just go ignored while those conversations happen, spin out, and then disappear. So, you know, that doesn't stop me from caring about things that are happening around me, right? I just try to take a breath and take a look, step back, and find people I know who actually have real information about these topics, and then present them when time allows, when we have a chance to let cooler heads prevail, shall we say. So, but that doesn't stop me, and I really do want to do a look at things that are going on in the world, things I worry about, right? I think worry is probably one of the big words of our time, and I don't care what perspective you're coming from, you're probably a little worried about where things are. I don't think you could look at what's going on around us and not have some angst, some fear, some sleepless nights as I do. So I really do want to talk about what makes me afraid in this moment and share that with you and be real open about it. What makes me afraid and why? And then I would like to look at some of the positive things that are going on that we shouldn't forget, that in these times of great worry and angst and upheaval, there are beautiful, good things happening. And then I'd like to close today's show with a notion of what we can do, where we always leave it, right? What can you do? What can I do? What can we do together to try and make those incremental changes I talked about at the open of the show? So that's the arc of today's show. It's going to be a little different. There's no experts. It's just you and me and some music and some conversation. And we'll be right back. From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Six Pack. Crack open some change and support the candidates and causes we need in these times. Paid for by The Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. Other people certainly have made top 10 lists significantly more famous than I will, and this certainly would not be one that would make any of the late night talk shows who are so good at that art. However, it is an important list for us, I think, in these times, at least for me. You know, writing it down was just writing down the top 10 list of the things that scare me most right now actually lightened my load a little bit, right? Like allowed me to put down on paper and share with you what's given me worry. So with no further ado, I'm going to do this. And, you know, trying to order these things is kind of stupid, right? Like I wanted to say, maybe with a 10th thing is the most worrisome thing to me. And number one is, oh my gosh, I can't sleep at night when this one pops into my head. But the reality is all 10 of these are kind of equal in my book. And they shift through my consciousness from day to day based on the news cycle and based on what I'm seeing but around me. But so I don't want you to think that, oh, well, Sean says that this is more important to him than that. And I mean, that's not really just take a deep breath. Sit back and listen to my existential angst. I know you're not paying. I'm not paying you as my therapist, but I hope this is as therapeutic for you as it is for me. Now, number 10, tariffs and inflation. The combination to me is extra scary. And the reason it's extra scary to me is that tariffs create scarcity. And we just went through a pandemic not all that long ago. Some of you may remember that. And coming out of that pandemic, the scarcity of items based on a broken supply chain led to inflation. And then corporations were like, woohoo, we can raise our prices and blame it on that. And they did all that. And corporate profits went way up and our prices went way up in lockstep. And what we ended up with were people who were really harmed by the increase in their cost of living because their income did not keep pace with that. And that put more people out on the streets. It made people more food insecure. I mean, many of the things we've talked about in the first 9 episodes were directly impacted by that scarcity created at least partially by the pandemic and then later by corporate greed. And now it looks like we're going after creating this situation again. I see stories at the ports, big ports like Los Angeles, where there are significantly fewer ships coming in because people aren't buying things, businesses aren't buying things with when there's significant price uncertainty. Like if you thought that the tariffs 200% today, but it might be 35% tomorrow and it might be 12% the day after that, well, which time do you want to buy? If you're a business and you're making your order, you sure don't want to buy it when it's a 200% tariff, right? You want to wait until that tariff comes down to 12%. But you don't know if or when that is going to happen. So what you do is just nothing and you don't place orders. And what is going to happen is there's going to be weird bits of scarcity again that are going to lead to inflation. And we don't need another inflationary cycle in this country. This is one of my great worries. And so, you know, I don't know what we can do about it except to advocate to those who have power that particularly if you are, you know, in the ruling party right now, which is the GOP, go to your members of Congress and tell them that, hey, you know what? We don't need more inflation. Can you please get our government to lay off on the tariff idea? And, you know, let's hope we can make some impact here, because I'll tell you, back-to-back inflationary cycles with just a little gap in between is not good for most people. Number 9, this is going to be a weird one. You may not have heard about it unless you travel in certain circles, but it's this idea of the abundance, and I call it theology. Based on the Ezra Klein book that was released in the last year of the same name, Abundance, these folks are out telling us some crazy things. And they do it in a way that feels almost like quasi-religious, but the concept of abundance is not religious. It's the notion that our actual problems could be solved if we just removed all regulatory barriers and made it easier for people to do things. Now, I love that idea that maybe we could have more housing if it was easier to build housing. That I think that's a great idea. Or maybe we could have more renewable energy if it was easier to build renewable energy. But the problem with this theology is that it was written without any explanation of the social and political system that we currently live in. We talked about it on our Money in Politics episode, but like when legislation is written, it's not you and me who's in the room having a say about how we'd like this legislation written to make our lives better. It's the folks with money. It's the folks who are in the room, and that isn't us. And so if you take this abundance theology, this abundance idea into the halls of power, whether that's here in Sacramento or whether that's in Washington, D.C., or any of the other state capitals in the United States, what's going to happen is the folks with a financial interest in things are going to come in and remove the regulations that bother them and probably, worse, place more regulation in to prevent others from coming up behind them and competing with them. And this has been the last 40, 50 years of politics in the United States, that laws are written not just to do something, but to help some people and to prevent others from having access to certain markets. That's just the truth of it. And the idea that presented in that book, Abundance, and among those folks, is that that's not true, that doesn't exist. And I'm sorry, if you ignore the system in which your ideas are going to be implemented, then you have basically written a fiction novel. And that's why I almost accidentally called that Ezra Klein book Abundance a novel, because it is, if it ignores reality, right? If it is fiction. I'm going to do one more, and then we're going to take a break. But this is a big one for me. Number 8 is crypto. And I know there's people out there like, bro, crypto's going to the moon, you know, and this is how I'm going to make all my money. You know, and in like every other bubble that has existed in markets in the past, that was there would always have been somebody saying that, you know, back in the tulip craze in the Netherlands, you know, back. I'm sure there were people like, bro, tulips are going to the moon. They probably didn't sound like that. They probably had a Dutch accent, which I will spare you the trouble of having to hear my version of a Dutch accent. I think that would just come out bad. But I will just say, like, crypto, you know, the thing is that it's increasingly being allowed to be an unregulated market. Like, it started out with this idea of being an unregulated market. There was an attempt to regulate it because it is a financial instrument, the same way stocks and bonds and mutual funds and real estate are financial instruments in addition to being something else. And it seems like now both parties of our government have decided, you know what, we're just going to let this be the Wild West. And I know you probably thinking, okay, boomer, you know what, you don't know what you're talking about. And you should just, you know, stop here. But I actually do. I've spent a lot of time learning about crypto. And by the way, I'm not a boomer. I'm Gen X. You may have heard of us. Probably not, though. Anyway, you know what? I know what bubbles look like, and I know what fraud looks like. And, you know, speculation in the market is going to be potentially the next big thing to take down our economy because it's unregulated. And when markets are unregulated, people are doing bad things. You can just be sure of it. And when they do enough bad things and there are enough bad outcomes of those bad things, some people are supreme winners, like in our housing crisis back in 2008, 2009. And many of us end up paying the price for it. So, you know, in my lifetime, I've seen many boom and bust cycles because I am Gen X. I've been around a little while. And I worry that crypto is going to be our next boom and bust cycle.
When you find matters is what you feel. It arrives and it disappears. Driving down.
If you love live music and want to be up close and personal with the band, there's only one place to go: the Torch Club. This hotspot is the place to be with 2 shows a day, Wednesday to Sunday. Check out the upcoming shows at torchclub.net or just drop by 904 15th Street in Sacramento. The Torch Club. There's always something happening. Moving on to number 7. AI. This is crypto's robot cousin. And I think it's going to be destructive in ways that people aren't considering. I mean, I know that, you know, there are some, you know, basic uses for it that I see people using it for. And that seems so innocent and fun and, hey, let's make a little, you know, cartoonish character and have it say something funny. Woohoo! Yes. And I can do that very simply just by typing in some words and creating a prompt. But or I can have my email written for me and I don't have to write my email anymore. And then pretty soon what you see is AI slop, right? Go to any social media channel and it's just filled with posts written by AI, fake photos and images created by AI, and all kinds of other stuff. And honestly, if you've read any of these things and you know the subject matter, oftentimes what you see is that it's wrong. And you think to yourself, well, how could that be? How could it be wrong? It shouldn't be wrong, right? It's scouring the entire database of human knowledge, and how could it get it wrong? But the bottom line is, we're wrong a lot. And if we're wrong a lot, AI is going to be wrong a lot. The more people are wrong in a particular way, the more AI is going to pick up on that as if it's truth. Somebody said once to me that AI is the best liar you ever met. And I think that's pretty apt. I'm so worried about this. In fact, our next episode is going to be on this entire topic, and we'll get into it in great depth. But I do want to say my biggest worry right now is about the displacement of people who work, right? Like, that's a huge thing. I don't think AI is going to become Skynet and destroy us immediately, right? I think the first thing is it's going to disrupt our human space in very real ways. And it's already doing that. It's already disrupting our energy economy because it is so energy intensive that new sources of energy have to go online just to run the servers for AI. Think about that for a second. So your funny little, you know, image of a superhero cat, for example, you think, well, what harm could that do? But it actually takes massive amounts of computing to create things like that and to scour the databases of images that it's stolen from people. And, so that's a big worry of mine. And I do think that, you know, the first thing that we're going to see is the displacement of workers in a variety of fields. And it's, you know, it's already happening in journalism. You're starting to see articles written by AI. And if you read those articles, they are absolutely terrible and often wrong. So, yes, we are going to talk about this, and it is my number 7 worry. Number 6, food. The thing we eat every day that sustains us. What part of our food system isn't concerning? Bees are in peril. Climate change is impacting the ability to grow crops in our fertile regions. Soil is depleting. And corporate vertical integration of food systems prioritizes profit over nutrition. If you aren't worried about food, you haven't been paying attention. And so we just did an episode on food insecurity, and I think we see how that sort of plays out downstream of this concern. But, upstream, I think, is the real concern, because those of us who can afford food still can get food. But if we start running into the challenges of our food system crashing, that may not be the case. Number 5, due process. The notion that everyone gets their day in court is foundational to this nation, and it is being eliminated. This is flat out dangerous. When nations do this, it always starts with a vulnerable population, like immigrants. But it rarely stops there. Once due process is gone, nobody is safe, because anybody can be accused, and with no day in court, it's impossible to prove innocence. So when you have a friend say, well, but they're criminals. Well, how do we know? Right? Somebody said so? Okay, you're a criminal. No, I'm not. Well, prove it. Well, I don't get a chance to prove it. Well, then you're in jail. Right? This is the witch trials. I don't know any other word for it, like way to describe it. It's why it's in our Constitution that due process is required to deprive you of life, liberty, and property. And so therefore, if you're taking away due process, you are taking away the foundation of our nation. And due process has to apply to everyone, even the people we despise, even the people who have done potentially horrible things, need to have their day in court so nobody is deprived of life, liberty, or property without a chance to have it proven against them. This is what differentiated us from countries across the world for generations. And if we take it away, we are lost. Isn't it lovely? Was in heaven every day, passing through the gates. If you would ride this train, have your ticket in your hand. We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. Returning to our top 10 list of things that have me worried and not sleeping at night. Number 4, the end of organized labor. For 90 years, the National Labor Relations Board has existed to solve labor and management disputes and to protect the rights of workers. Now, it's effectively shuttered and incapable of performing this function. They are not filling the positions to make sure that the agency will not function. though they didn't just strike the agency down with one big blow, what they've done is essentially made it non-functional. And in making it non-functional, it ceases to exist. And when it ceases to exist, labor essentially has no place to go. And this effectively ends the organized labor as we know it. Now, there is a bill in the California legislature that would move cases from the National Labor Relations Board to the Public Employee Relations Board of California if the NLRB fails to act. But that has not yet been passed and signed by our governor. And so there is a place for advocacy for you there if you really do care about the rights of workers to organize, which, again, is something that many people fought and died for. And many of the benefits we got from that are still part of our work system to this day, like the end of child labor, the weekend, you know, and many, many, many other things that we all take for granted. Paid holidays, for example. So you should be concerned about the end of labor. I certainly am. Number three, the conversion of existing private prisons to concentration camps and the building of more camps. Anybody seen Alligator Auschwitz? I mean, Alligator Alcatraz. That's what they call it. I call it Auschwitz because let's be honest, that's a concentration camp. I don't know how you can put any kind of nice words around it. You can sell merch and, you know, have people talk really funny things about it. But, you know, when a member of our government says that, there's enough alligators there to eat 65 million people, I think you know what they're trying to say. And they're not even saying they're saying the quiet part out loud, right? Who's going to be put in these camps? Well, you know, first it's going to be people who are super vulnerable. We just talked about that in the due process part. Second, they're going to be put there without due process. So who knows if these folks are actually done anything wrong? We won't know. We do know that many citizens who have committed no crime have been rounded up based on how they look, and the head of our Homeland Security apparatus and border security has basically said we have the right to pick up anyone we want anytime based on how they look. So that's how it starts. But, you know, once those things get built and they need to get filled and somebody's making a profit, GeoCorp and CoreCivic, you know, then what, right? When corporate profit becomes the thing that drives policy decisions because they need those buildings and camps filled with people, you're going to see a lot more people get incarcerated and for a lot longer time. We've seen this, these places, these companies that operate these private prisons have literally bribed judges to make them keep people in their facilities for longer. So they have always been behind legislation that was more punitive, because more punitive legislation means more people in jails. More people in jails means more profit for GeoCorp and CoreCivic. So if you want to really point at where this is all being driven from, that is certainly one angle and one that worries me quite a bit. If I didn't mention number two here, I wouldn't be a human being. Number two worry for me right now is the ongoing genocide in Gaza. And I know that saying that word loads up a lot for people, right? I am not trying to diminish any other genocide, and certainly not trying to diminish the Holocaust by calling what is happening in Gaza a genocide. But the word genocide has been defined, and the international courts have said that what is happening in Gaza is a genocide because it meets the tests of what that term means. Period. End of story. And if that is true, our support of that, us providing armaments for that, makes us complicit in that. And it has to stop. This is our weapons. Our hands are dirty. And the thing that makes me nervous is whenever something like this happens abroad, when we support fascism somewhere else, it always comes home to roost. And what we're seeing is that some of the technologies that were used in Gaza against Palestinians are now being brought to the United States and being used by ICE against people in our country. So it's not just the genocide, which is awful, as bad a thing as humans do to one another, the worst possible thing that humans do at scale. It's that this will not stop there. And it has to stop now.
So give us what we're asking for. Cause either way, we're gonna take it. Our power doesn't run on nothing. We need the land you're standing on. So let's go. Move it.
From the Roots Up is community radio that is sponsored by community businesses. If you'd like to join the growing list of folks who make this show possible, reach out to Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at khi.com. All right, so we took a break before number one. I think that's what you always do. There should be like a big buildup and some drums and, oh, we're at number one now. But I feel like it's been a lot. So I do try and put some breaks in here just to give you a chance to, you know, breathe deep, hold it in, and relax a little bit before I give you number one. And number one on my list of things that I greatly fear right now is climate change. We're in a dire situation now, and all the indicators are moving in the wrong direction. We have seen tremendous disasters across our nation and across our globe that are related to the increased ocean temperatures, the increased carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. And this is just science. This isn't political. This is science. And it has been politicized. And that's dangerous. Climate and energy funds have been shut off by the current administration and in the U.S. And that's scary, right? We just committed billions and billions of dollars in the previous administration to creating a renewable energy system, to having more electric vehicle chargers, to, you know, subsidizing the purchase of electric vehicles, really trying to do something and cut back the amount of fossil fuels that are burned in our country. And they've been shut off now. And private industry is moving away from its past climate initiatives for a variety of reasons, some of which are political, some are just financial, and some are related to the implementation of AI, where they've realized that if they're going to have AI, they're going to have more energy. And if there aren't renewable sources for that energy, what are they going to do? Stop making their money on AI? Of course not. Their shareholders wouldn't tolerate that. And so they're backing away from climate initiatives that they started decades ago. The habitability of our planet for our species and many others is being confined to a smaller part of the planet. So when we talk about things like immigration, which wasn't explicitly on my list, people ought to understand that there is a direct line between climate change and immigration. When parts of the world become uninhabitable, and that is going to increasingly happen as our planet warms, as the polar ice caps melt and raise the sea levels, there are going to be fewer and fewer places that are habitable for human beings. Some estimates have that the lower third of the United States will be uninhabitable by the end of this century. That means there are people alive now who will see a United States where the lower third is uninhabitable. That's where a lot of people live, by the way, in the United States, because prior to climate change, that was a nice place to live, right? People aspire to moving from the eastern seaboard down to Florida or from Chicago down to Phoenix. But, you know, these things are changing, right? And if it becomes uninhabitable, people are going to be fleeing there and they're going to be crammed into a smaller and smaller space. And we're going to need some of that space to grow the food required to feed our population. You can see how this spirals on itself. All issues stem from climate. All issues that we will face going forward will come out of the climate crisis. If we as human beings don't do something about it now, the consequences will be dire. I have sons and a grandson now. I want them to live in a world that they can actually live in, where there isn't constant strife, where there isn't constant worry of a natural disaster caused by climate change. I want that for them. You should want that for the people we haven't even met yet, because it is our species that is in trouble. Rich, poor, any race, creed, and color, we are all human beings who are in this together, and we are in peril. And I'm not going to leave you there with a dark space, because when we get back, I'm going to talk about things on the horizon I see that are bright lights of hope, things that we can really point at and say, if we can expand this effort, we can do better. And I hope you've stuck with me on this journey of the 10 darkest things happening around us. There's probably 100 I left off the list. And you will go now with me to a place of hope and positivity and action on From the Roots Up.
We all know that money spent on politicians is nothing more than a bribe. Citizens United called it free speech, but we know better. But what if we could balance the scale a few bucks at a time? That's what we're doing at the Six Pack, taking small donations and adding them up to make things more fair. Crack open some change. Support the Six Pack. Paid for by the Six Pack, which is responsible for the content of this advertising. www.thesixpack.com. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. This episode of From the Roots Up is brought to you by The Torch Club, Sacramento's premier live music venue, every Wednesday to Sunday. Check them out at 904 15th Street in Sacramento or online at torchclub.net.
We're back here on From the Roots Up, and I hope you're doing okay after the long period of darkness that we opened the show with. I do really hope, though, that there were in that darkness that that there were things that you could take away from that, things that maybe you could relate to. And you know, I'll be honest, I do feel better from having gotten that off my chest and talked about things that are worrying me. But now let's turn to some things that are a little more positive, a little more bright, the rays of sunshine peeking through the dark clouds that that give me hope. And I hope we'll do the same for you. I don't know if I could get to 10, but I'm gonna try at least to get to 5 and see where we go with it. So number one for me, young people give me hope. And I guess by saying that, I guess I'm identifying myself as old. I would say that in my mental age, I'm maybe not old, but my physical age is undeniably middle-aged, and therefore, I guess I'm talking about, you know, generations that are younger than me, and that would include millennials and Gen Z and Gen Alpha. And I gotta say, you know, I'm not one of those people that believes in that negative generational warfare that is often engaged in social media and other places. I've got plenty of millennial friends, and I believe that the millennials, for all the grief they get, are an amazing generation of folks. Some of the best activists and organizers I know are millennials, and they don't deserve any of the grief in that generational warfare. They give me hope. I would also like to say, as a father of two Gen Z sons, I love Gen Z. I absolutely love them. They are very much remind me of Gen X, except they're so much cooler than us. Like we thought we were amazing. Following the boomers, we thought, you know, we really broke things open and we changed things. And I think there's a lot to be said for my generation, but I will just say Gen Z is like Gen X if Gen X didn't have so many hangups about sexuality and gender and race that were still holdouts from previous generations. Gen Z has basically seems to almost effortlessly move past those things and to talk about what's more important, our essential humanity. I am so excited by what that generation is bringing in terms of energy, but their DIY spirit that I think is very similar to Gen X. And then the Gen Alpha folks that I've known, gotten to know, you know, more, there are more kids now, but, you know, on their way to adulthood, they're awesome too. They actually are going even beyond Gen Z. I just think that they have a certain I don't know, it's an attitude, I guess, that I that is completely their own, and I am so looking forward to see what they're going to do as they move into adulthood. So, young people, you give me hope. Number four. Salt batteries. You probably never heard of this, but actually, I'm using salt as an example because that's one that I've heard of. But battery technology, writ large, is improving quickly and dramatically. And this is going to be an essential technological breakthrough that we are going to see in the next few years at scale. And what that's going to do is make a lot of things possible that aren't possible now or are only possible by using things that are still part of an extractive economy like lithium. And when you combine that with renewable energy, you get a carbon situation that is significantly better than where we're at now. It starts moving us back in the direction we need to move, and we need to go there fast. So I consider battery technology and salt batteries as one example, a ray of light in this dark time. Continuing on energy topic, nuclear fusion. I can't believe I'm saying those words and not laughing. There was a time in my life where it seemed like we would never have nuclear fusion as a technology. And yet I am starting to hear rumblings that people are actually commissioning nuclear fusion facilities to power things. Initially, it's going to be small scale, but if we can get to large scale, basically harnessing the power of the sun or power the way the sun generates power and use that at scale with the byproduct being water or water vapor, I think we're going to be in really good shape at tackling this climate crisis that we're facing right now. Regenerative agriculture is the next ray of light. It's number two on my list. Imagine if we could have a food system that was sustainable and carbon neutral or maybe even carbon negative, meaning we're not generating, actual carbon footprint from our agriculture. Regenerative agriculture are the techniques that would allow that to be possible. And farmers are starting to get it. I think governments are starting to get it. Politicians are starting to get it. This is a place for your activism, by the way. If you know people who are in agriculture, or if you have the opportunity to talk to members of our legislature or members of Congress, want to do some letter writing, regenerative agriculture is a fairly low cost, high benefit thing that we could be doing at a greater scale and ought to be doing at a greater scale because the return on investment is enormous. Drum roll, please, if you will. We're getting to number one on my list of rays of sunshine, things that give me hope. And this last one is one that is close to my heart, and that is activism and organizing is starting to happen at scale. In the labor movement, we say that the best organizer is a bad boss, that a bad boss brings workers together. And as things spin out of control, politically here in the U.S. and around the globe, we're seeing people of all kinds come together in ways we haven't seen in decades or maybe even ever. And this gives me immense hope, because if we're going to make a real impact on things, we all need to have a role, a place to be. And I've seen the solution, and it's us. Look in the mirror, and the person looking back at you is the person you can count on to make a real difference. Find your area of passion, gather people together, and then get out there and make the change that you want to see. And when you start doing that, by the way, you're going to expand your circle of friends, and you're going to expand your circle of influence, and you're going to sleep better at night. And what can I tell you? If that isn't a ray of sunshine, a ray of light in these dark times, I don't know what is. So get out there and do it, and we'll be right back.
One for the struggle, one for the lasting peace. One for you.
Okay, so where we always end the show is with ideas of things that you can do. You make one little thing better, and you show people that it's possible, and then they'll make something better, and then another person will see. And it becomes the kind of thing where the notion that we ought to be engaged in this activity becomes normalized. It becomes what we do. Although it sounds kind of amorphous, I'm going to try and give you some specific things that you can do, that we can do, that will make things better. The first thing that I think you really want to do, it sounds really difficult, is something maybe we've forgotten about between social media and, you know, working from home and greater isolation of people. Get out and meet the people you live near. Whether that's if you live in an apartment complex, get to know your immediate neighbors above, below, to your sides. Find out who these folks are, get to know them a little bit, invite them over, have a beverage, have some food. Breaking bread is always a great idea. It always brings people together. But to get to know the people around you, your neighbors, and let them get to know you. Be open to sharing who you are and what's important to you. Number two, you know, get out there and use your voice and your time to support the voiceless and powerless out here in our society. You know, we've kind of talked around the issue quite a bit, but there are people right now who don't have a voice and they need yours. You know, and what does that look like? Well, find a group who's doing a Migra Watch. Find a group who will train you to do accompaniment for people who are going to court and fear being arrested coming out of court. Those are two great examples of how you can give your voice to the voiceless and your power to the powerless. And, you know, in the end, doing so ultimately protects you, because these attacks on folks who are our most vulnerable members of our society don't ever stop there. It's always the trial run for something much worse. So let's stop it now and let's do it together. Examine your personal habits and focus on improving one thing each month. Find something that would make a difference that you haven't yet done and try to do it. Are you driving distances that you could easily walk? I know sometimes the weather is bad. It can be really hot, really cold. You can have rain, whatever. Sometimes some of you live in other areas of the country, you get snow. But when you can, if you convert maybe some of those trips to walking trips, start with the shortest ones and then work your way up from there. Or maybe, you know, if you've got a bike and you prefer cycling, try cycling, right? But use some kind of transportation other than your vehicle to get from point A to point B. There's a couple things that happen when you do that. First of all, obviously there's climate benefits to it, but here's another one. It slows you down a little bit. It allows you to see the space that you inhabit, to interact with it in a different way. Maybe even interact with some folks along the way that you wouldn't interact with if you were just isolated in your car. Getting out in the world has benefits. Just pick something like that one time a month. Just find one thing that you could do and try to do one new thing like that each month. And if you do that at the end of the year, you will have done 12 things. That sounds pretty good to me. Like, that's a lot. That's a huge amount of change you could be making in your life and in your community. Number four, tap in and tap out. You know, it's easy to think in times like these that we just have to go at it 110% every single day, morning to night, not sleeping, worrying, getting up, repeating. But you know what? At some point, you will burn out, and we need you. You know, everybody in your life needs you at your best. And so when you burn out, you know, what happens is you're going to have to take some time off. It's going to be forced time off. And, you know, in the end, you're not going to accomplish as much. So as my friend and former mayoral candidate here in Sacramento once said, rest is revolutionary. And I love that, because it gives you permission to take the rest you need so that you can be at your best when we need you. Tapping in is when you see somebody who needs that break and maybe hasn't recognized it themselves. Just giving them a gentle tap on the shoulder and saying, you know what? Hey, you can take a break right now. I got this. And stepping in for them and giving them that break that they might not otherwise have taken. And our final thing I want to leave you with in terms of things we can do together is a very simple one, and yet often so difficult for folks in this world we live in. And that is just to be kind and be empathetic. and make a point of doing that out loud. You know, sometimes you think somebody, you think to yourself, wow, that person is really doing something great, but you never tell them. You think, they've got all the confidence in the world. They probably know that they're doing a great thing. I don't need to say anything to them. But I will tell you, it is the nicest thing you can do for somebody to show your appreciation for what they do. When I get emails from you telling me that you like the show, that you really appreciate what I'm doing, it makes my entire day. I can't tell you how nice it is to hear that. And even when I hear somebody's ambivalence, but just knowing that somebody took the time to engage and listen to what we do here on the show, that made me feel great. So be kind, be empathetic, and do it out loud. And, you know, all I can say is kindness always goes a long way. I hope you've enjoyed the show this week. I know it's been a lot of me, but it is our 10th episode, and I sure hope you've gotten some food for thought and some places you can engage. And here's to the next 10 shows and the 10 after that. I hope you'll join me every week as we delve into a topic like this, and I hope you'll engage me in a conversation. If you want to reach out to us, send an email to fromtherootsupshow@gmail.com. Sometimes